All right. Thank you guys so much for showing up. I really appreciate it. I'm gonna start us off with a little prayer tonight. Thank you, Lord, for this gathering and this workshop and this group of your children that are striving to grow and to understand what it means to be free of addiction and alcoholism, what it means to be comfortable in our own skin, what it means to be kind and compassionate to ourselves and to others. Lord, please enable us to set aside everything that we think we know so that we may have an open mind and a new experience. Please help us to see the truth tonight about the unmanageability of our lives. Amen. Okay, so we are on the last portion of our first step. This tonight we're going to be talking about the unmanageability of our lives, of our spirit, the spiritual malady, the internal portion. We've spent a lot of time talking about what happens when we take a drink, what goes on in our mind when we're trying to stay stopped, we find that we can't. And tonight we're going to discuss the unmanageability of our spirit, which kind of drives everything. The restlessness, the irritability, and the discontented feelings that we have, we experience sober. When we talk about the malady and the bedevilments tonight, of course, when actively drinking or using, we are experiencing a lot of turmoil in our life. That's the reason why we came here to seek help. But what we'll focus on is the unmanageability of our life sober. And the inability for us to find ease and comfort in life on our own power. I'm gonna share something with you guys. I read this today. This is a book called Around the Year with Emmett Fox. Really cool book, daily read. This October 9th. This is called Bulb and Flower. It says, who has not at some time or other planted a bulb and enjoyed the pleasure of waiting for the plant to appear to develop and ultimately produce the glorious flower itself? Notice here that you naturally plant the bulb and expect the flower, the hyacinth or the crocus, to follow. No sane person would dream of planting the flower and expecting a bulb to come up. Yet in our general life, many of us do just that. We expect to begin with the flower. We think that we shall have desirable states of mind or body, happiness, freedom, health, if only we can change outer conditions in some way. Yet this is really trying to plant a flower because we are trying to put effect before cause. The law of the universe is thought first and then expression, and never can this law be reversed. Let all things be done decently and in order. 1 Corinthians 14:40. Remember that today I thought of the spiritual malady and I thought of external circumstances in my life and how I continue to try and dictate how I'm going to feel on the inside by what's going on the outside. I haven't been able to accomplish that. Today I know why, but I didn't know that. So we'll talk about that tonight. At the top of chapter 4, we agnostics, we transcribed step 1, unmanageability of my life, page 44, 45, and middle of page 52. The second half of step 1, unmanageability, untreated alcoholism, spiritual malady. This condition exists before and after the first drink, drunk or sober. You see, we experience this malady in our life, whether we're drinking or not, using or not. At times we get an instant false sense of ease and comfort. You see, if drugs and alcohol were a real sense of ease and comfort, if drugs and alcohol were a real solution, then it would work. Then I would be able to be comfortable in my own skin, be content, lead a happy, joyous, and free life while drinking and using. What I have found is that that's not true for me. Although I tried time and time and time again, I was never able to reach this level of comfort that I was seeking. Then as I'm abstaining from drugs and alcohol, I tend to find that this restlessness, irritability, and discontented feeling comes up in my life. And I ask myself, but I'm sober, but I stopped. I'm not drinking. I'm not using. That was the cause of all of my suffering, wasn't it? That was the cause of all of my misery and my depression, wasn't it? And what I come to find out is that there's so much more. If I'm suffering from an illness that only a spiritual remedy is going to conquer, then I have to seek out a power greater than myself. So it says here, in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. So we've talked about the moderate drinker, the heavy drinker. We talked about the ability for those people to stop when extreme circumstances arose in their life. Doctors telling them to stop. Family threatening to leave them. Jobs on the line. What we've learned about the real alcoholic is that no matter what the consequences or circumstances, we cannot stay stopped. So in this chapter, they give us two questions that we can ask ourselves that are very simple. The first one is, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, is that the case for you? Did I find that when I honestly wanted to stop, I could not do it? I could not quit entirely. Yes, the answer was for me. Or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take. So when I began to drink or use, did I have little control over the amount that I took? Yes. Did I have this insatiable desire for more? Yes. Did I understand why that was occurring? No, not until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and learned of the phenomenon of craving. I recognized that I might not be normal. I saw a difference between me and, let's say, my wife or some friends of mine that had the ability to moderate. The people that looked at me at 2 a.m. after a hard night of partying and said, man, you are crazy. Like, what's up with you? Throw that stuff away, please. I'm going to bed. And I would say, well, just give it to me. You guys go ahead. I'll take care of the rest. And so the answer to those questions for me is yes, I cannot stop when I honestly want to on my own. I can't stay stopped. And I cannot control the amount that I take once I start. Those are the only two questions that the alcoholic and addict truly need to ask themselves. People talk about qualifying themselves to be here. I say, let's just read the text in the book, have an experience with it, answer the questions. Just answer the questions. Because if you are, you're probably alcoholic is what it's telling me. Now remember, I'm not here to tell any of you that you're an alcoholic or an addict. This book's not here to tell me that I'm an alcoholic or addict. Bill uses the word probably. Asking me to dig a little bit deeper. If you would like to continue reading, if you're relating, please move forward. You're probably one of us. So if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only an experience, a spiritual experience will conquer. What does that mean? What do you mean a spiritual experience? So you've given me the knowledge that I have the phenomenon of craving. Yes, I see that. You've talked to me about my mental obsession. Yes, I suffer from that. And no, I cannot stay stopped on my own power. Then you're telling me that that knowledge in itself is not enough for me to recover. And now you're telling me that I'm suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience is going to conquer. To some of us, that may be scary. Remember, we talked about the spiritual experience. We read the spiritual experience in the appendix too. We talked about educational variety. We talked about sudden and profound experiences being erroneous. So remember, let's not get too caught up in what the spiritual experience is, what it looks like, how it has to happen. Bill said that once he was willing to believe in a power greater than himself, he made a beginning. So as I reach the bottom of this paragraph, if I get to a place of, you know, you've broken me down. You've made me reflect on all the insanity of my life, the horrible things that I've done, my lack of willpower when it comes to alcohol, my inability to control myself, my surroundings. But you're telling me that that's not weak. Don't beat myself up. I'm kind of at a loss. So what more do you have for me? What is the spiritual experience? What do you mean? What does it look like? So it goes on to tell us that to one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. So if we find ourselves struggling with this concept, we must answer these questions honestly for ourselves and for our own experience. Even though you can't prove to me that there's a God, or even though I adamantly don't believe in a God, do I believe that to continue as I'm going on in life will mean disaster for me? Do I believe that? See, that's what's important, because if I believe that, then my mind can begin to open. See, I'm desperate. I'm beaten. I'm broken. I do not have my own solution. Remember, and there is a solution. It said, I have two choices. I can go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of an intolerable situation, or I can accept spiritual help. Remember, I mentioned to you guys as we went through, although it was part of our first step, they were giving us hints as to what's coming. You see, so this is part of my choice here. Am I going to sit in the place of agnosticism or atheism? Or am I going to recognize that if I continue on as I have been, it means disaster in my life? What am I going to do about it? To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. How scary is that? It's true. You see, we just asked ourselves the question, do I want to go on to the bitter end, blotting out this consciousness of an intolerable situation? Do I want to accept spiritual help? Is my prejudice and ideas in life so strong that they're going to outweigh the fact that I admit that I'm doomed if I continue on as I have been? These are not always easy alternatives to face. You see, common sense would tell you, what do you mean they're not easy alternatives? You ask me if I'm going to destroy my life, maybe be doomed to an alcoholic death, or live on a spiritual basis, that's a no-brainer. But see, not with us alcoholics and addicts. We like to complicate things. We have to make you gotta show, you gotta prove it to me, man. What do you mean? Right? Hold on. Let me think about that for a minute. How crazy is that? See, that's part of our insanity. We're not touching on the malady yet. We're still talking about this insanity in our life. This inability to make this common sense solution. We perceive ourselves as people that have good morals, right? Good standards. Why is it so hard to make that choice? I mean, crazy. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. So 100 people was the original fellowship that put together this book. 50 of them were of that type. Atheist or agnostic, couldn't make the choice, accept spiritual help, go on to the bitter end, be doomed to an alcoholic death, live life on a spiritual basis. I don't know, man, come on, can't this self-knowledge just fix me? Can't I just be okay? You know, I've learned a lot. I have. I understand my disease. The difficult part is now we're going to begin to talk about things that we don't understand. Now we're going to begin to talk about things that we're going to have to rely on that we can't prove or touch or feel or see. We're going to begin to walk towards some sort of solution that has no logic or reason behind it if we get too intellectual about it. But let's just focus on the alternatives. Going on to the bitter end. Blotting out consciousness. Doomed to an alcoholic death. Destruction of our lives. Those are the alternatives. And until I truly believe those alternatives, I'm not even going to begin to be willing to take a look at this malady in my life. And how is this a part of the first step anyway? What do you even mean? Once a man is even willing to believe in a power greater than himself, we feel that he has made a beginning. That's what it says in Bill's story, right? Why would I be willing to believe in something? Look at my alternatives. That's why. Look at the alternatives in our life. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope that we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. We must. There's no option. You see, the spiritual solution in our program has been lost over the years. It's not talked about enough. Our relationship with our creator or the God of our own understanding or the spirit of the universe or whatever power we're relying upon to save our soul, to free our minds up, to give us some peace. We kind of keep it private, keep it personal. We'll talk later on in the book about never apologizing for our God. We'll talk later on about how important it is to share the spiritual feature with others freely. Right? Perhaps it's going to be that way with you. But cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. So they just told us twice. Okay? Out of the first 100, 50 of them didn't really want anything to do with this spiritual solution in the program. Okay? What is that for me? What do I see there? See some hope. See some hope. See that maybe I'm not alone in doubting this whole God concept, let alone his ability to actually become personal to me and help me out when I feel uncomfortable, when I feel irritable, when I feel restless, let alone help me when that mental obsession starts taking over my life and I got nothing on my mind but getting loaded. Why would he care? So it's helping me to understand that I may not be the only one. And it's a good thing because remember, we come here, this fellowship, this cement that binds us to join forces with others that are like us. So we don't feel alone. So we don't feel isolated. So we don't feel like we're the only ones that have crazy racing minds and can't sit still at times and feel uncomfortable in our own skin, sober, and don't want to talk about it. Or just starting this out on this journey and don't even understand it. And thought that, hey, I'm supposed to be getting better. What's happening here? Right? We need not be disconcerted, disturbed. Let's just have some hope. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. So I'm a man of good morals. I'm not a violent person. I don't steal from people. I don't try to consciously do wrong. Yes, I'm very selfish and self-centered. I'll manipulate you and I'm doing things in life for personal gain. But I do consider myself a man of morals. I do have a pretty good philosophy of life and, you know, the difference between right and wrong. But what it's telling me is if that was sufficient enough to overcome this illness, then I would have recovered a long time ago. That would be enough. And surely if I took all the knowledge you've just given me in the last 44 pages and combined it with a good code of morals and a philosophy of life, man, I got what I need. I'm good, right? That's why so many people abandon this process because it's so real and it's so meaningful and it's so difficult. And fear takes over. And I praise each and every one of you that continue to show up and continue on this journey, whether you've been through it before, whether you've never been through it, whether you've been sober a long time, whether you've been sober a short time. It doesn't matter. If we're going to get cracked open and dig deep, and we want a new experience and an open mind and some sort of message with depth and weight, it's going to take a little bit of pain, some suffering, and some effort on our part, right? But we found that such codes of philosophies did not save us no matter how much we tried. We can wish to be moral. We can wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Utterly. This philosophy, these morals, our human resources. Remember, our willpower is strong in all other respects in life. We're not just a group of losers that can't get life together. We're a group of alcoholics and addicts that are suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience is going to conquer, which transfers to leading a spiritual life with no middle of the road solution and seeking out that solution all the time. But we can't do that on our own power. Why? Why do we fight it? Why do we half measure? Why do we carry around so many questions? You see, the power of God can help to change my thinking, which is going to help to change my actions and will help to change the way I feel. I have the ability to change my outer circumstances for the better a lot of the time if I set my mind to it. But the more that I try to redirect my own thinking to work on the way that I'm feeling and my motives in life and the way that I'm acting out, the weaker I become, the more I recognize, it's almost like I succumb to, well, this is just me and this is how it is and this is how my brain works and I need to accept myself for who I am. And that's happened a lot in my life. Now coming into a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, working the steps, remaining sober, doesn't mean that it's okay for my thinking to remain the same, for my motives to remain the same, for my actions to remain the same. Because what happens then, my feelings remain the same. And it's only a matter of time before I'm all wadded up, I'm uncomfortable, and the only solution I truly know is to get loaded. And we talked about the mental obsession so much, we can all recognize the past few weeks about how that delusion is going to come at us in so many different forms, right? We're going to justify it. We're going to rationalize it. We're going to pretend that the illness isn't there. All behind this inability to really redirect my thinking so that I can feel okay inside. Right? Because all action is born in thought. Everything begins. That's why the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind. See, that's what I'm trying to explain to you tonight. And this is only what I recognize for myself, because it's easy for me to say, wait a minute. So you tell me I have a physical allergy. You tell me I have a mental obsession. Then you tell me the main problem centers in my mind. So what does spirit have to do with that? Why? If I can just focus on my mind, change my thinking. The problem that I have found in life is it is completely and utterly impossible for me to do that. Without freeing myself up from old ideas and resentments I'm carrying around and prejudice, my thinking won't change. So I need this spiritual solution. It said, I'm suffering from an illness that only a spiritual solution will conquer. So now I'm going to rely on the spiritual solution to conquer this illness that centers in my brain. That's the answer. And that's where my power goes away. That's where I am no longer in control. And therein lies the conundrum, the difficulty, you know, the paradox, if you will. You know, I'm powerless, but I'm strong. I don't know. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. What does dilemma, what's a synonym for dilemma? Problem. What is our problem in life? Lack of power. What do you mean power? What's power? Spiritual solution. Suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience will conquer. What's that power? That's your spiritual solution, your spiritual experience. The asterisk at the top says, lack of power is only a problem when I want to do something. Lack of power was not a problem when I accepted being powerless. But the day came when lack of power was no longer acceptable. Then it was a dilemma. Okay, so let's talk about that. That could be a little confusing there. We transcribe a lot of things in this book, and sometimes maybe we don't break it down enough. Maybe we don't understand it. And again, all I can share with you is my understanding of it. But it's helpful for me to, if I'm going to write something that seems important, and that's kind of building on the words in this book, I want to take a look at it. So lack of power is only a problem when I want to do something. So the only time I'm worried about not having power in my life is when I want to do something I can't. Okay? That's the only time that lack of power is a problem for me. That's the only time I see it as a problem. Lack of power was not a problem when I accepted being powerless. Okay, so wait a minute. When I came into AA, I was desperate, I was beaten, I was broken, I couldn't stop, couldn't control the amount I took. My life was in ruins. You say lack of power, I say, okay, hell yeah. Give me some power. Why? Because I'm ready to admit I'm powerless here. What am I powerless over? Powerless over alcohol and drugs. Go ahead, bring on that power. But the day came when lack of power was no longer acceptable. What does that mean to me? Well, see, I've abstained from drinking and drugging. I'm so far away from this physical craving today that it doesn't affect me anymore. It's irrelevant. I'm not really suffering from a mental obsession. And now you're telling me that all of these other aspects of my life and this internal feelings that I have are because of lack of power too. Sober? No, man, that's not acceptable. I can't accept that anymore. Nope. You can have my drinking. You can have my drugging. But I'm not going to give you anything else. And I sure don't want to talk to anybody about how miserable I really feel at times. How scared I am at times. How I feel useless at times. How I feel like I can't even be of real help to anybody. How I'm totally unable to control my emotional natures because of the way you act around me. Nah, man, we ain't talking about that. That's ridiculous. I just want to be sober. You see, so now lack of power is unacceptable in my life. That's too much. So what we're going to recognize today and not get ahead of ourselves is that we become uncomfortable sober. And that malady will drive us to the obsession, right? And we're going to focus on that. And starting next week, then we'll really start talking about how that solution comes in. And are we or aren't we willing to allow this lack of power to be acceptable in our lives now? Because what happens if it's acceptable when I admit powerlessness over drugs and alcohol, but it's not acceptable in other aspects of my life, it becomes very difficult to rely upon. It becomes almost intangible and not so real anymore. And that's what we're trying to avoid here. We're trying to understand that this malady will always exist, but it can be treated. Spiritual solution. So we had to find a power by which we could live. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live. What does that mean? Live comfortably. Live contented. Live with some joy in life. Yeah, we're happy when circumstances are good. What about when circumstances are bad, right? What about when things aren't going our way? You know, it's easy for me to be doing okay when everything's going my way. It's more of a measuring stick just to see how I'm doing when things aren't going my way in life. So now you're telling me that this power can help me with that? It can help me, like, to actually live sober? Well, what is this power? It has to be a power greater than ourselves. Something bigger than me. Something more than human. And I encourage each and every one of you to put on paper, what does God look like to you? What does your God look like? Bring it to your homework group. Read it to your leader. See what they have to say about it. I'll tell you right now, that could be your God. That is your God. Nobody's going to put on paper some judgmental, condemning, hateful power in my life. We all want the same love, care, understanding, compassion, second chances, no judgment. That's the power of God. We're going to let God show up for us where we need him, how we need him, right? So obviously, but where and how are we to find this power? How am I going to find this power? As we go through our next chapter, we'll talk about that a little bit. It will be a journey unique to each and every one of us. But if we focus on the words in the book and we keep it simple, especially for those who are just starting out, especially for those who are carrying around some doubt. And please do not get discouraged. It says over here, do not be disconcerted. Remember, don't get discouraged. Okay? Where and how am I going to find this power? It says, well, that's exactly what this book is about. That's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. What's our problem? Remember, lack of power is our dilemma, right? What's a dilemma? A problem. What's in this book? Exact, clear-cut directions on how to solve that problem of lack of power in your life so that we can remain free. Doesn't mean that we're cured. It means that we can be free. We can be reborn. We can live this life new. So that means that we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. Remember, the moral convictions and philosophical ideas of life they're not enough. But this book has mixed science, religion, medicine. So there is some weight in good moral compasses in our lives, right? But they've written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. You see, treatment centers talk about cognitive behavioral therapy, okay? They want you to change the way you think so that you change the way you act, which will ultimately change the way you feel, okay? But what drug addicts and alcoholics find is that they cannot change the way they think. It does not work for us. Well, when you take spirituality, the power of God, and you combine it with that cognitive behavioral therapy, that idea of redirecting my thinking, utilizing this new power in my life, now we got something. Now I can start on the inside, and I can internally begin to like truly heal. Right? I can invite the power of God into the whole science of redirecting my thinking and changing my crazy actions and motives so that I can find some sense of contentment and joy in my life. Right? But if I continue to chase it on my own power, well, then you've given me enough knowledge. I have a physical craving. I suffer from a mental obsession. I'm going to skip all this God stuff, do some inventory, make a little amends, and then see if I stay sober, you know? Some people do that. I tried it and I went back out. I love the peace of mind that comes with a good prayer. Even if that feeling is fleeting, even if it comes and goes quick, there's still this element of, oh, I can see what they're talking about, ease and comfort. I get it. I see it, right? Which drives me to continue. So, and it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. Why are we going to talk about God? Because we've written a book that's spiritual as well as moral. See, we're going to bring in the power of God into our recovery. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Why? Because you can't prove to me that there's a God. That's why. See, I just proved to myself through reflection that I'm one of you. In the last 44 pages of this book, 43 pages that I went through. Okay, you proved it to me. It's clear as day, writing's on the wall, I cannot deny it. But see, you can't prove to me that there's a God. That's agnosticism. So that's why difficulty arises. And in the rest of this chapter, in our second step, we're going to touch on all of those things and talk about them and our ability or inability to overcome them. Many times we talk to a new man and we watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. See, that's what we've been doing for the last 8 weeks. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God. Why? Because God doesn't care about me. Because I never believed anyway. How's it going to work now? What if it doesn't work? What if I surrender and it just doesn't work? What about all you people that have believed your whole life? Aren't you better than me? Don't you deserve it more than me? Right? So I'm going to share a little parable with you guys, okay? So there was a guy that owned a vineyard, okay? And he offered some work to some people. He said, hey, go out and work in my vineyard. I'm going to give you a dollar for the day. Okay. He said, okay, we'll gladly go out and work for you. Then half the day goes by. You see some people standing on the street. It says, hey, you don't look too busy. You guys want to work in the vineyard? I'll give you a dollar. Come work for the rest of the day. I say, okay, deal. Then the 11th hour comes, right? You got 1 hour left in the day. And this boss of the vineyard goes to a couple other men and says, hey, you guys, you're like wasting your time. You're wasting your day away. Why don't you come work for me 1 day or 1 hour left in the day? Come work the vineyard. They say, okay, for a dollar. Day's end. All the workers come up to the boss. They say, okay, time to get paid. Gives everybody a dollar, right? So what do the guys say that worked all day? Say, well, that's not fair. Say, we were here all day in the heat of the sun. What about those guys? And then the guys that worked half day say, well, what about the guy? I worked a half day. What about these three guys that came and they only worked an hour? And the boss of the vineyard says, you know what? Doesn't matter. They were willing. They got paid. They were willing. They got paid. If you are willing, you will be paid the grace of God. It does not matter how long you've believed, how long you've not believed, how long you've lived a life not in reliance, how long you've been reliant. You see, God's grace doesn't do favor. The definition of grace is undeserved favor. Undeserved favor. Each and every one of you get the exact same amount of favor from the power of God. All you have to do is be willing. Okay? And yes, that's a parable out of the Bible. And yes, my words kind of tweaked it a little bit, but check it out, man. The power of God is great. And you do not have to have worship your whole life or believe your whole life for this to work. That's a beautiful thing. That's power to me, man, because I've done some bad stuff. And I've turned my back on God quite a few times in my life, right? I'm the guy that said I've always believed. But, man, if you were a fly on the wall watching my life, you'd be like, what are you talking about, dude? You're a liar. You're an adulterer. You're a manipulator. You're a drug addict. You're an alcoholic. What do you mean you're a believer? Come on, dude. You're damned. That's what some would say. You're just damned. You better repent. Hey, brother, I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I'm going to repent. And God's grace will be showered upon me just like it is for you, even though each and every one of our circumstances are different. Okay? So that could be one of the reasons we talk to the new man and his face is like, man, come on. Why? Well, for we've reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. So there's another question to ask yourself. Have I neatly evaded this topic of God, this subject, this power? Have I neatly evaded it while in Alcoholics Anonymous? Have I been clinging on to things in life that I don't necessarily want to turn over? I don't want to talk about because they don't have anything to do with my drinking as far as I'm concerned. But the truth is they do. You see, this malady isn't the reason why we're alcoholic. We talked about the qualification, right? The phenomenon of craving, the mental obsession. Okay. The inability to control it, the inability to stop when I want to say stop. But this malady is what we're trying to treat. It's what we've been trying to treat since we first put that drink in our mouth, first put that drug up our nose, first took that hit, whatever it was. Excuse me. And so now today we begin to understand like, wait a minute, you mean there's real treatment for that? Absolutely. Remember God's grace. Doesn't play favorites. Just got to be willing to believe. Just got to come to a place to say, you know what, man? My life kind of sucks without God, right? Like, I mean, let's be simple about it. I just kind of like, I just want more. You know, why do I want more? Well, because I'm suffering inside. And I tell you, we have the ultimate ways of disguising it and lying to ourselves about it and just not wanting to acknowledge its existence, especially when we're trying so hard in a program of recovery to do the right thing and to remain sober. I'm just like, what is happening? You know, I ain't supposed to be miserable. I ain't supposed to be depressed. Maybe you are. Maybe it's a window or a door of opportunity for a little bit of reliance. We're all looking for the proof. We're all looking for, you got to show me that this thing is real. Well, overcoming circumstances in life that are super emotionally painful or fear driven and getting on the other side of them, knowing that our power wasn't involved, there's some proof there. Some real proof, right? So we're going to go to page 52 and we're going to talk about what we call the bedevilments, which is just basically kind of a description of what I've been talking about. So on page 52, it says that we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems this same readiness to change our point of view. What same readiness? Well, for tonight, see, when we go through this chapter starting next week, we'll look at it a little bit differently. But tonight, this same readiness is going to be the same readiness that we had when we could not stay stopped on our own. We could not control the amount we took. We were in a place of frustration and self-loathing, like, what's happening? I'm stronger than this. I'm more powerful than this. I should be able to control this. What's happening to me, right? So, we were having trouble with personal relationships. Okay, so there's one thing. Now, again, this isn't all of the things that go on in our lives. These are more measuring sticks, kind of like the circle and triangle of our program of recovery. The bedevilments are going to be measuring sticks of our spiritual malady, of our alcoholism, or untreated or treated. Now, granted, if all these things were perfect all the time, it would be a lie. For me, I don't know. Maybe there are people that everything's great, that never goes ups and downs. Again, I see it as a window of opportunity for me to understand that lack of power truly is my dilemma and that these things that are occurring inside of me, they seem to be happening outside of me, but they're affecting me inside and they're making me uncomfortable and scared and worried and doubtful. And so those are the things that I want to say, okay, God, what can you do for me? Having trouble with personal relationships. You know, I've been married for 31 years. And, man, learning to be intimate without like a sexual relation is one of the most difficult things in my life. That is a problem with a personal relationship. You see, we're going to look through these bedevilments. We don't want to just surface level them. We don't want to just say, oh, you know what? All my relationships are good. Sometimes we're going to have to dig a little bit deeper. We're going to recognize where we're lacking, where we're falling short, and what are we willing to do about it? I'll talk more about that next week. What am I willing to do about it, right? I've been able to be truly intimate with somebody that I've known for 4 decades and been with for over 3, raised a family with, and now we're empty nesters. And those relationships aren't very good some of the time. I'm in recovery. She's not. There's all kinds of issues, right? What am I willing to do with it about it? Couldn't control our emotional natures. Okay. Can anybody make you angry? Huh? The way people act around you, does it make you angry sometimes? Do you react? Do you hang on to things? Do you feel it inside when somebody is not acting how you think they should? Or do you have the ability to have compassion? Do you have the ability to listen all the time? Do you have the ability to not open your mouth unless it's kind, necessary, and true? Right? See, because if you were able to control your emotional nature at all times, your mouth would only open when you were saying something kind, something true, or something necessary. Think about that. Think about the madness that goes on, the emotional roller coasters that happen in your life. Or maybe they don't. I'm talking about myself. Hoping that you guys can kind of recognize. We were a prey to misery and depression. You know, some days I wake up sober. I don't want to do anything that I need to do. I've been fishing for years. I love it. You know, lately I haven't been. You know, I got a nice boat. There's lakes around my house. You know what I do? I think about it. I don't do it. You know what happens? Self-pity kicks. I don't know why sometimes, man. Right? I don't know. I don't know why certain things in life that I love to do, I don't really have desire to do. All I'm recognizing is that there are times that the day comes and I've had outside help in my time of seeking outside help prior to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was diagnosed with mild depression and OCD. Okay. And sometimes I think about that whole mild depression thing, like, wow, right? Tough guy like me, man. No way. I don't need no help. And I surely ain't taking your meds. But man, this program and these bedevilments and this page and this paragraph makes me kind of go, man, Jason, you're a little depressed sometimes. Huh? Miserable? I don't know. I'm not comfortable in my own skin sometimes, you know, right? Miserable might be harsh, but definitely uncomfortable. And mildly depressed at times. Yeah. And it's just me. I'm just recognizing my malady here. These are all the things that I'm going to treat with alcohol and drugs. My relationship's messed up, right? I'm going to go get loaded. You piss me off. I can't control my emotional natures because you don't know how to behave, right? Because you're not acting the way I think you should. And I'm allowing you to make me angry and I'm allowing you to make me react. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go get loaded. I'm a little depressed this morning. I don't feel like doing that. You know what I sure feel like doing? I'll go hit that bong real quick. I'll make me a Bloody Mary. Hell yeah. You see what I'm saying? Like that's my solution. We had a feeling of, oh no, we couldn't make a living. Couldn't make a living. I've owned a business for 26 years. Just now, today, learning to be satisfied, finding that no matter what the circumstances, overwhelmed with work, don't know how I'm going to get it done, have no work, telling the employees to sit at home, no money in the bank, $1 million in the bank. I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied. I'm not comfortable. I'm scared. What am I scared of? Failure? Future? Right? Looking bad to everybody around me? Because if I look bad, you ain't gonna like me no more. And I surely can't be better than you if I'm a failure. Right? See? So not being able to make a living doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have a job. Okay, so I want you to contemplate that. Think about that. Not being able to make a living is, are you okay with the career that God has blessed you with? Are you okay when God decides it's time for a change in that, in your life? Are you okay when things are not going your way and it takes a whole lot of effort and prayer and thinking and perseverance to, and most important, courage to walk through the fire because I'm so scared, right? Are you okay? I'm learning to be okay today. It's been one of the biggest changes in my life is the way that this attitude and these motives for my business has transcended from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I mean, I used to lose my shit, man. I'd be taking out on my wife. I'd be screaming and yelling in the morning. I'd be screaming and yelling at night. I'd be half drunk by midday. I'd be high all the time. I'd be selling drugs and growing drugs to make money to pay the guys because I could do anything and everything it takes to make it. Right? So yes, it was a lot worse, but what my point is, let's recognize where we are. What's really going on? Why am I not able to make the living? Not why am I not capable of having a job? Why am I not employable? I mean, that could be a circumstance for some of us, but I'm pretty sure most of us are employable and have some sort of job. Let's just look at we couldn't make a living, right? Let's look deeper. Let's look through it. Same with the relationship. Same with the emotional natures. Same with the misery and depression. Because see, it's too easy for me to look at all this stuff and go, nah, man, I'm good, right? Oh, wow. Oh, 9-step promises. I'm good. They counter all of this, right? I'm going to go up to the podium. I'm going to tell you all about how, what does everybody say? They've all come true in my life. Come on, man. I want some honesty. I want some pain. I want to talk about where you're not making it and how you're relying on God in order to get to the next 24 hours without getting loaded. Because that's the life I live. And it's okay. I recognize it. Why? Because the malady lives in my life. I'm not afraid of it. You know why I'm not afraid of it today? Because I understand it. But I see so much work that has to be constantly done. Right? Why? Because I'm looking at my current life here. That's what I'm looking at. We had a feeling of uselessness. Man, you ever feel useless? I mean, it could be as simple as that. Man, I ain't qualified to do a workshop. I surely ain't qualified to take somebody through the steps. What are you talking about, man? I can't care for my elderly mother or, well, I ain't got the time for that or I ain't good. I can't give my daughter advice because I don't know. Right? There's so many shapes and forms, and all it is I'm just not good enough. It's not good enough. Why am I not good enough? Because lack of power is my dilemma, right? Remember the parable. God tells you, you are good enough. No matter how long it's taken you to get here, you are good enough. Let me help you. Let me help you be useful. Let me help you understand. We were full of fear. Oh man. You know, I've been contemplating this last night, man. I'll be honest with you. Like that just exists in my life all the time. But what does it say in here? The evil and corroding thread, the fabric of my existence is shot through with it, right? It also tells me things like my fears fall from me. I would say falling. Yes. Acknowledging they exist. Leaning on faith, asking God to replace the fear with some faith, right? But the absence of fear in my life would be a total lie. Be a total lie. Man, I'm gonna get loaded for 30. Let's see, I'm 50. 34 years. And I've been in here for 7 years. And so, just sometimes looking forward at a life of sobriety is like scary. What does that even look like? I don't know. I don't know. I think sometimes acknowledging my fear, it's another opportunity in a window for me to say, hey, and then the way that we go through the work and doing the grid, you know, ultimately there is no God in my life when the fear is alive and well. Reliance on Him can help me to minimize the damage that fear is doing. My biggest fear is failure. That's my fear. That's the one. Right? I can't be looking bad in front of nobody. I can't let you know how scared I really am. The beauty of this program is that I get to be honest with you guys and say, I'm scared shitless most of the time. I don't know, man. My guys haven't worked in, I don't know, like 6 weeks. It's just been crazy. It's like I don't know what's happening. I'm leaning into recovery, doing this workshop. I just wrote a book. I'm about to put that out. My business seems like the bottom's falling out. I'm just full of fear. And the craziest thing is that I got more money than I ever had in my life. I could not work for 10 years and my wife and I wouldn't have to worry about paying our bills. I'm not lying. And the fear is overwhelming. You see, I get to look at that and go, what is happening? What's going on? That's how powerful the malady is for me. That's how real this thing is for me. And the only relief I get is to over and over and over each morning, each night, throughout the day, say, you know what, God, I'm going to lay this at your feet. You know, here's how my prayer goes. Father, I'm going to take my fear and my doubt and my worry and my business. I'm going to lay it at the foot of the cross. I lift it up to you in the name of Jesus Christ. Please free me today. Get me through this day. Now, I share that with you guys because, see, that's my understanding. It's not trying to put it on anybody else. But if we all have our own understanding, it's okay to share what our understanding is. And the point of it all is to say, I'm reading a sentence on page 52 out of the Devilments. I suffer from it. This is what I've been doing. But check it out. Do it every day. Because it's not like, poof, it's gone. Now, I talked about that little fleeting feeling, that little comfort. If my mind can stop racing when I hit the pillow, there's a little bit of comfort, right? There are times where I can't get to sleep for an hour, 2 hours, because it's just so much fear going on. Fear, 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 right? Doesn't mean I'm not recovered. Doesn't mean I'm not working a spiritual program of action. Doesn't mean I'm doing half measures. If anything, it means I'm not afraid to be vulnerable and honest with you guys so that you can kind of take a look at what's going on with you. What's going on, right? We were unhappy. Oh no, not unhappy. What do you mean? Like I said, when everything's going good, I'm good. When everything's happening the way I want it to happen, I'm okay. But when things are going sideways, oh man, it's tough. When I get angry, it is the biggest blocker from the power of God in my life. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to pray. I don't want to read. Surely don't want to talk to anybody. Getting in this place of unhappiness. What's the solution? Maybe some joy. What does that look like? I don't know. I know joy is not circumstantial. I know joy can come from the power of God in our hearts. And a comfort that we can't muster up on our own or get from anybody else. Because see, the problem is we can attain joy from others, but what happens is there will be a time where they let us down. And then all of a sudden we're unhappy. See, so it never really was joy. God will never let us down. God will never let us down. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. That's a feeling of uselessness, right? I'm no good. I'm not good enough. Why am I not good? Well, I'm not good enough for my parents to stay together. I'm not good enough for my dad to be the dad I want him to be in my life. I'm not good enough to help somebody else. What are you, crazy? That's impossible. There's no way. I've got nothing good to offer. You see? Now, I've kind of gone through it in the extreme manner, but I just want to kind of hammer home that this is a constant measuring stick for us. We all have certain, let's call them line items. You know, I'm a business kind of guy. So a line item out of the devil mints, right, that really speaks to you. Maybe it's the fear one. Maybe it's the relationship one. Maybe it's the couldn't make a living one. You know? I mean, if I had to go to one, my line item would be that I can't make a living. Sitting here more successful than I ever thought I would be in my life. Crazy. That's the malady. Okay, just keep telling me, Jason, you are not good enough. You are not good enough. You don't deserve this. Right? So find your bedevilment. Ask yourself if your dilemma truly is a lack of power. Ask yourself if you really, really want to find a way to live. Ask yourself, what are your alternatives? What are those other choices? Ask yourself what type of lifelong conceptions are going to have to be thrown out the window in order to overcome this thing that you can't prove to me there's a God. Or God won't love just me, or I am not good enough for him. And I haven't been relying on him my whole life, so why now? Why does he care? See, those are all ideas and attitudes and emotions that need to be cast to the side. He's right there for you. Don't matter if you worked a full day. Don't matter if you worked a half day. Don't matter if you worked the last hour of the day. All that matters is you came to work. You came to work. You opened your mind. You opened your heart. You said, here I am, God. And you know what my prayer is? Please help me be willing to believe in you. Please help me to overcome this doubt that I'm feeling. Please help me to be free of these old ideas that are just stopping me from opening up to you, that are just creating all of this resistance in my life. Because remember, if we didn't really have to work on this spiritual solution, we've got the knowledge right now. We've talked about it. We've hammered it home. We've done our homework groups. We've answered our questions. We all said we believe. So that's not enough. Not enough for me. Doesn't work, right? Okay. I think that's going to wrap up the malady for tonight. I want to leave you guys with something, and, I want to try and play something for you. I think it's important. Remember, we've been beaten. We've been broken. We're talking about the insanity and destruction of our lives, right? If you feel a little bit uncomfortable, you're in the exact right place. That means that you're digging a little bit deeper. That means that you're seeing some truth, right? So let's allow our rock bottom to be a firm foundation in our lives, a firm foundation. This is the beginning, this rock bottom that we are recognizing, the malady that we talked about tonight. We're going to allow that to become a firm foundation for reliance upon God, right? And instead of allowing this to be a breakdown in our lives, we are going to allow this to become a breakthrough. This is but a beginning. Right? Elimination of our drinking, was only a beginning. That's what we were told. Okay. Let me see if I can pull this up. Hopefully you guys can hear it. All right, let's listen real quick.
If you're washed up on a lonesome shore, soul crushed and tired. If you're curled up on the kitchen floor, and the house is on fire. If you couldn't feel far from redemption, you're the closest you've ever been. Rock bottom is a firm foundation. You see, my friend, death is not a breakdown, it's a breakthrough.
Breakdown of breakthrough. I love you guys. Congratulations on getting through the first step. I'm going to say a prayer for you guys. May the Lord bless you and protect you. May the Lord smile on you and be gracious to you. May the Lord show you his favor and give you his peace. I love you guys. Have a great night.
Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.